Dev Rana.
Thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, July 11th, 2014. And as usual, would like to thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande. Here are our top stories this evening. The MDC renewal team and Mabambokusile Dawn Party leader Simba Makoni says President Robert Mugabe is to blame for Zimbabwe's current economic crisis. A High Court judge today reserved judgment in a case in which human rights lawyers are seeking to stop the government from increasing toll gate charges.
The increased toll fees are unlawful for several reasons. The first is that the statutory instrument by which the toll fees have been increased purports to have been promulgated under the Road Motor Transportation Act. Now that act has got nothing to do with toll fees.
And Zimbabwe has been ranked as the most improved fragile country in the world by an organization called Fund for Peace, owing to some positive political reforms. An offshoot of the Movement for Democratic Change, calling itself the MDC Renewal Team, says President Robert Mugabe should resign for presiding over an economy that is collapsing. Our reporter Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
MDC Renewal Team spokesperson Jacob Mafume told Studio 7 that President Mugabe has failed to lead the country and urged him to resign from his post to pave way for fresh polls. This comes at a time when ZANU-PF has admitted that it is ready to engage the country's opposition parties with a view to finding solutions to problems affecting the country following former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai's calls for national dialogue. ZANU-PF has also set a precondition that Mr. Tsvangirai should recognize the outcome of last year's national elections, which the MDCT claims were rigged by President Mugabe and his party. Mafume tells Studio 7 that any form of negotiations with ZANU-PF were retrogressive, adding the best way forward is for Mr. Mugabe to throw in the towel.
When someone fails to do their job, they must simply resign and leave. Now, ZANU-PF has got a number of options. It's either they can quickly get rid of their chief executive, who is President Robert Mugabe, who is clearly failing to deliver on a simple mandate to make people live well. Or alternatively, if that cabinet and ZANU-PF cannot take that decision, then President Mugabe should fire the cabinet and bring in people who can competently deliver in terms of the economy.
Mafume said polls to be held thereafter should only be held after key democratic reforms have been implemented to ensure an undisputed outcome. Mr. Tsvangirai on Wednesday claimed that Mr. Mugabe's illegitimacy was the major cause of the current economic meltdown.
Without reforms and without realignment of the electoral management and also the electoral laws to the constitution, there is no point in participating in such election. We have tried to emphasize with our colleagues who have been going to the proverbial slaughterhouse like cows, that if there is the purpose of an abattoir for cows is simply to kill the cows. So you cannot go to a system that was designed to destroy the opposition.
Contacted for comment on the calls for Mr. Mugabe to step down, ZANU-PF spokesperson Rugare Gumbo said he was in a meeting while several calls to the ruling party's secretary for administration, Didmus Mutasa, went unanswered. But ZANU-PF activist Maurice Ngwenya told Studio 7 by phone that the MDC renewal team is seeking attention and is now using national issues to divert focus on the internal squabbles in the MDCT. He added that there is no need for those negotiations, arguing that the MDC has nothing to bring to the proposed discussions as it was founded on the Mugabe must go principle. Following last year's disputed polls, Zimbabwe's economy has been shrinking, and the MDCT claims that more than 300 companies have shut down since the 2013 elections. Authorities say the country's economy is likely to grow by at least 6% this year, but international finance institutions believe that it will grow by less than 2% in 2014. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Thanks, Thomas. Meanwhile, Mabambo Kusile Dawn Party leader Zimbabwe Makoni says Zimbabwe's problems lie squarely on President Robert Mugabe's populist politics. Makoni, who is a former cabinet minister and secretary of the Southern African Development Community, says President Mugabe has over the years failed to make critical decisions on issues that affect the country. He speaks to Studio 7's Blessing Zulu about this and related issues.
The Minister of Finance budget statement analyzed correctly the difficulties in our economy. Its consistency and reliability and credibility of government policies and their implementation. Throughout the history of our independence, government produces economic policies which they don't implement. So I would say that what needs to be done in the Zimbabwe economy is implementation consistently, persistently, and sustainably. But policies that government promulgates are not just slogans for the time being, and that policies are not scattered and abandoned in midstream. That investors, whether they are local investors, and there are many Zimbabweans who would like to invest in their country, who have no confidence that their investment is secure, or even if they are foreign, their concerns are exactly the same.
You were in government yourself for a number of years. Where exactly does the problem emanate from when it comes to the implementation matrix?
The problem emanates from our politics. Our government, particularly the head of state and government, commander-in-chief and all those titles he has, is a short-term person who wants to please people there and then. He has no staying power for difficult policies. So he then requires those who work under him to behave like he wants immediate gratification.
But those who support Mr. Mugabe will say sanctions negatively impacted on Zimbabwe's economy.
There are no sanctions, Blessing. You know that. Mugabe knows that. Everybody knows that. But even if there were, Blessing, Zimbabwe would not have been the first country to be under sanctions. Rhodesia grew under mandatory economic sanctions. Iraq was under economic sanctions. Iran is currently under economic sanctions. But their economies are not dwindling and declining like ours is. So Mugabe and his team have always been keen on passing the blame and scapegoat. It's time we accepted that we are our own liberators and that responsibility for our growth and development lies with us, not with other people. Other people can help us, indeed may help us, but primarily we can't bank our fate on other people when we ourselves are doing nothing.
Some are also saying the reason why ZANU-PF behaves the way it is behaving is because the opposition is very weak, and as a result it is giving Mr. Mugabe a blank check.
Well, there is no doubt that the opposition is weak, but that's no excuse, because Mugabe went to the electorate to seek a mandate to serve the people, not to serve the opposition. So it is a nonsense to make an argument like that.
Dr. Makoni, there is also this talk of a grand coalition. Are you in it?
I want to reaffirm what I said before. In January 2012, I called formally for a grand coalition for change. And I'm not claiming special credit for it, but I'm saying I'm one of those who has advocated that all Zimbabwean leaders, leaders in politics, leaders in business, leaders in the profession, leaders in civil society, and other categories of leadership need to work together to solve the problems that our people are confronting on a daily basis. So the answer to the first part of your question is yes, I am sorry. Am I in it? No, I'm not in it because a grand coalition doesn't exist yet.
That was Mabambo Busile, Dawn Party leader Simba Makoni, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu. Court Judge Joseph Mafusire today reserved judgment in a case in which human rights lawyers are seeking to stop the government from increasing toll gate charges. Despite the outcome of the court case filed yesterday, the Zimbabwe National Roads Administration has started charging motorists the new fees increased by 100% at all toll gates countrywide. Several motorists are complaining that the increases are unjustified given the poor state of the roads and the current liquidity crunch. The lawyers are questioning the validity of the government's move to amend roads regulations to effect toll gate charges. They say any toll fee increases will affect millions of people in Zimbabwe currently facing serious economic, social and political challenges. Motorists are now expected to pay $2 instead of $1 at toll gates, while buses and others will be charged up to $5. Advocate Louis Uriri of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights speaks to Studio 7's Ntungameli Nkomo about today's High Court judgment.
Well, the matter was heard before His Lordship the Honourable Mr. Justice Mafusire, who has reserved judgment. We contended that the increased toll fees are unlawful for several reasons. The first is that the statutory instrument by which the toll fees have been increased purports to have been promulgated under the Road Motor Transportation Act. Now that act has got nothing to do with toll fees, it's got nothing to do with collection of revenue from toll fees, and the correct act would have been the Toll Road Act. And we're basically saying that collection of money under the incorrect act is in itself unlawful. The second point that we took is basically that the statutory instrument itself should have been tabled before the Parliamentary Legal Committee as required by Section 137F of the Constitution, which was not done. There was also a requirement for consultation with the Ministry of Finance, and there is no evidence that that was done. We also took the further point that the Toll Roads Act provides that the monies collected from toll gates shall be for the benefit of the Consolidated Revenue Fund, whereas the statutory instrument says that they are for the benefit of the road fund. And we're saying that that statutory instrument is contrary to the Toll Road Act and the monies being appropriated for an unlawful purpose.
So effectively, this means that toll fees have gone up.
Yes, they did go up at midnight on 10 July 2014, such that as we entered 11 July, they were charging the increased fees. But that does not detract from the agents of the matter, because for every second that they are charging the increased toll fees, they are doing so contrary to law.
That was Advocate Louis Uriri of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights speaking to Studio 7 from Harare. Zimbabwe has been ranked as the most improved fragile country in the world by an organization called Fund for Peace, owing to some positive political reforms. Fund for Peace says some of Zimbabwe's positive moves include the approval of a new constitution that limits future presidents to 2 terms and remarkable economic growth in recent years despite high levels of poverty. Zimbabwe tops the list of 5 improved countries, which include Cote d'Ivoire, DRC, Sierra Leone and Somalia. Since 2005, there have been 4 African countries consistently ranked in the top 10 worst of the index: Democratic Republic of Congo, Sudan, Somalia and Chad. What is more apparent, however, is that a country can become more fragile or violent quickly, making its way up the list easily. Coming down is much harder. Some economists say Zimbabwe's economy is in a free fall and might find itself tumbling down the index before the end of the year. Senior researcher Dewama Vinga of Amnesty International says it is embarrassing that Zimbabwe's ratings is ranked alongside countries at war.
Well, I believe it's quite narrowly focused, because if you look at a broad range of indicators, particularly on the economic front, things are not looking too good for Zimbabwe. But if the focus in terms of the indicators was purely a peaceful or non-violent election, which Zimbabwe held in 2013, then perhaps you could say there is improvement in terms of Zimbabwe's index. But broadly, there are many underlying issues that have not been considered that one would want to see considered for a more comprehensive and accurate position in terms of where Zimbabwe stands today.
Zimbabwe is said to have improved alongside countries like Cote d'Ivoire, DRC, Sierra Leone and Burkina Faso. What do you make of this?
Well, if you look at the grouping, Zimbabwe is in a very bad group of countries that are in conflict or at war.
That was Dewama Vinga, a senior researcher at Amnesty International. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Johannesburg, South Africa. The National AIDS Council, or NAC, and other organizations, including the Zimbabwe National Network of People Living with HIV, today marched in Harare to commemorate International AIDS Candlelight Memorial, a day set aside to remember those that have died of AIDS. The day is internationally marked on May 31st, but Zimbabwe failed to commemorate it due to some logistical problems. Reporter Jonga Kandemiri speaks to National AIDS Council spokesperson Tadiwa Fupa about the event.
We have managed, together with the Zimbabwe National Network for People Living with HIV and AIDS and other partners, to hold the day today. And it started with a march around the city and back to the townhouse. Solidarity speeches were then delivered at the townhouse, and then the lighting of candles, prayers and writing of names of people's loved ones on a piece of cloth that is usually spread at each and every candlelight memorial.
Who were the invited guests, and also how was the turnout?
The turnout was relatively high, considering that it's a bit chilly, and at this time of the day, a lot of people came. I really appreciate their presence. And we had the UNAIDS country director, Dr. Michael Bartos, and MSF was also represented. The Minister of Health and Child Care was represented, and the speech was delivered at the function. We also had other organizations, and the National AIDS Council Directorate was also represented.
How significant is this day to Zimbabwe?
The day is quite significant in that it raises awareness of the existence of HIV amongst us as the people of Zimbabwe. And it also goes to conscientize people that as we light the candles, we expect everyone to be enlightened.
That was National AIDS Council spokesperson Tadiwa Fupa speaking with Studio 7 from Harare.
This is Satenda Gumbo, host of the Youth Forum, inviting you to join me this weekend as I feature a young academic named Energy Maburutse, who is here at Lynn University studying his second year.
The attitude that people have in America is that they come up with a statement, a person with a disability. And yet when you come here, it's usually a disabled person. Once you say a disabled person, you already cripple them.
Make sure you join me this Sunday on the Youth Forum.
The Portfolio Committee on Youth and Indigenization today toured the Chisumbanje ethanol plant in Chisumbanje and met with villagers who expressed their views over their relationship with the company. The committee, led by Gokwe Nembudzia legislator Justice Mayor Wajajena of ZANU-PF, was invited to Chisumbanje by the Platform for Youth Development Trust. There have been problems between the community and the fuel company over boundaries and employment issues, among other things. Studio 7 failed to get a comment from Wajajena as his mobile phone was not reachable. But Platform for Youth Development Trust Director Clarice Maduku tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri that the tour was very important to the community.
Yes, I'm very much excited. The meeting is just getting over now. There were 22 members of parliament who came with 15 journalists. When they came, I was part of the team that also went around touring some of the projects that the company was claiming to have done. And it was clear that most of the things that the company had said it had done, had not done it. The community was well mobilized. There was over 1,000 community members who were able to speak, and they were unanimous in agreeing that the relationship between MacDom, Green Fuel, and the community is sour, is bad, and it needs a lot to be improved.
That was Platform for Youth Development Trust Director Clarice Maduku in Chisumbanje.
This is Marvelous Mhlanganya Huye, the host of the Women's Forum. This week we are speaking to
Chiedza Gazirai, a young woman from Zimbabwe working in the United States for a year at the U.S. Global Leadership Coalition. Please listen in to Women's Forum tomorrow live on Studio 7 as I talk about my experiences in the United States vis-a-vis my experiences in Zimbabwe.
Coming up next, thousands of Argentines attacked to the streets of Rio de Janeiro. We will tell you why. But first, a look at regional and international news. Palestinian officials say the death toll from Israel's Gaza offensive has risen to 100, including women and children. Ukraine's defense ministry says a rocket attack by pro-Russian separatists in eastern Ukraine Friday has killed at least 19 government servicemen and wounded 93 others. And Germany's foreign minister says he will raise the issue of U.S. spying on his country when he sees Secretary of State John Kerry in Vienna in the coming days. Villagers in Mulilima, Matabeleland South, say a herd of about 40 stray elephants, most likely from Botswana, have invaded homes in the area targeting harvested crops such as melons in the granaries. The Zimbabwe Parks and Wildlife Management Authority, or ZIMPARKS, have reportedly killed one elephant in an effort to scare away the rest, but to no avail. Meanwhile, ZIMPARKS Public Relations Manager Caroline Washaya Moyo tells reporter Standekile Mhlanga that ground and air patrols have been increased following the recent fatal cyanide poisoning of four elephants at Zambezi National Park by suspected poachers.
We are working together with the police. We are working together with the Environmental Management Agency because what we said and learned is that they poisoned a natural source. So Environmental Management Agency is coming in to assist us with further tests and also to detox the poisoned soil. But we are also working with Environmental Management Agency to ensure that whoever is given a permit, because in this country to handle a hazardous substance, you need a permit, and that permit is given from EMA. So we are working with them also to carry out awareness with whoever is handling these hazardous substances to not just issue them willy-nilly, because they are not only harmful to wildlife, but also to human beings. So we've increased our patrols both on the ground and on air to ensure that we don't get a repeat of what happened on the streets.
And that was Caroline Washaya Moyo, ZIMPARKS Public Relations Manager, on the line with Studio 7 from Harare. Put your flags up in the sky. Thousands of Argentines have taken to the streets of Rio de Janeiro to show support for their team that will play football's World Cup title on Sunday against Germany. The match will be at Maracana Stadium in Rio de Janeiro. At least 70,000 Argentines are in Rio, but most are without tickets to the championship game and without hotel reservations. They just want to be part of the excitement. Winning a third World Cup in their history is important, but for the Argentines, more so is lifting it in the heart of enemy territory, the Maracana Stadium, something host Brazil will be unable to achieve. And Argentinian fans are confident. Host Brazil play Netherlands for the third and fourth playoff after both teams failed to progress to the finals. Nico Pino of The Voice of America, who is in Brazil, spoke to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganya Huye earlier on.
For the Brazilian team, there's a goal to survive after what happened after the semifinal. So they really want to achieve this game for the third place because they really want to win and prove that what happened for the semifinal was a mistake. On Thursday, Neymar came to visit his partners and he talked about his injury, but he also said that, you know, we started together, we had to finish together for the people of Brazil because it was such a nightmare, such a tragedy here in the country. So I think Brazil, and especially Felipe Scolari, the coach, they really want to win. But on the other side, you have Netherlands trained by Luis Van Gaal. And Van Gaal is not really hot for this game. He said, you know, it's too bad to make two teams who lost to the semifinal and were not going to win the World Cup to play again. Such a disappointment after losing in the semifinal. So I don't know what's going to be the mood for the orange team, but you might think that they want to prove they are a great team. And see, I think it's going to be a good game in Brazil. David Luiz and Thiago Silva will play together in this game. So I think it will improve the motivation for the Brazilians.
That was Nico Pino of The Voice of America speaking to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganya Huye from Rio in Brazil. Meanwhile, in Uruguay, forward Luis Suarez banned from all soccer activity for 4 months and 9 competitive internationals for biting Italy defender Giorgio Chiellini during a World Cup match has lost his appeal, FIFA said on Thursday. FIFA's appeals committee rejected the appeal filed by the Uruguayan Football Association, AUF, although it can still take the case to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, CAS, a FIFA spokeswoman said. Italy's Giorgio Chiellini shows his shoulder, claiming he was beaten by Uruguay's Luis Suarez during their 2014 World Cup Group D soccer match at the Dunas Arena in Natal, June 24, 2014. And the United Nations warns that governments are ignoring the voices of young people and excluding them from important policy decisions at their peril. As nations mark World Population Day today, the UN Population Fund says investing in the well-being of adolescents and young people benefits communities throughout the world. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Young people comprise nearly 2 billion of the more than 7 billion people who now live on this earth. Nevertheless, adolescents and young people are marginalized and subject to some of the worst violations and deprivations in many countries. The UN Population Fund reports an estimated 515 million adolescents and youth aged 15 to 24 live on less than $2 a day. But despite the numbers, it notes 2 out of 3 countries do not consult young people on key policy decisions that affect their lives. The agency says young people face many challenges, especially in poor developing countries in Africa and Asia, where their numbers are huge. Globally, UN statistics find more than 15 million girls aged 15 to 19 give birth every year. The UN says early marriages, early pregnancies, and births account for the high percentage of maternal deaths in developing countries. In addition, studies show more than 2 million adolescents between the ages of 10 and 19 are...
Sorry, we don't have more time. That was Alyssa Schlein reporting for VOA in Geneva. Now to recap today's top stories. The MDC renewal team and Mabambo Kusile Dawn Party leader Simba Makoni says President Robert Mugabe is to blame for Zimbabwe's current economic crisis. A High Court judge today reserved judgment in a case in which...